to the Bad Boss Brief. Here are your hosts, Eugene S. Robinson and Stephanie Payrollo.
Welcome to the Bad Boss Brief. I am Stephanie Payrollo.
And I am Eugene S. Robinson.
And today we are on episode 30, so yay to us. And we're going to do what's called the Bad Recruitment Show.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to this. You don't know. I was just talking about it with somebody. Yeah, so let's go.
People have a lot of stories. And I think what's interesting, and we've all heard the stories over the years, recruiters who ghost people have, you know, different forms of bad behavior. But the reason this came to our attention is we do a small advice podcast. It's real short, called Sub Rosa. Mm-hmm. And somebody got in touch because they wanted to talk about a problem they had with recruitment. And it was so egregious that we were like, oh, no, we need a whole episode. We might even go longer than the normal 30 minutes with this one. Because what I did is, after hearing this story, I put out a call on LinkedIn and say, does anybody have any, egregious bad behavior recruitment stories? And not surprisingly, I got a few. So in this, there were really kind of two themes that came up, right? Mm-hmm. And the first theme is what one listener who sent us an email called the string along IP harvesting, which is when a person is in a very long recruitment cycle, like, you know, interview after interview after interview. And the clincher involves some sort of developing IP. Right. Whether it's a strategy, job description. In one case, someone was asked to write a white paper on cat grooming in a mobile environment. Right. Whatever it is, give us something for free. Position to kind of clinch your job. The second one is
show us how much you love us.
Yes. And how smart you are. Yeah. So the second theme is just the rank racism, sexism, exploitation, ageism that people wrote in about that they're encountering in their job search. And I think what's interesting is that not everybody, but a lot of the people that responded to us have been out of work for a long time.
Yeah.
And so what's happened is there's a power dynamic, right? They need the job.
Yeah. If I could lead off, because I know people sent this stuff. I got a job offer on a Friday. I show up Monday, right? They say, you show up Monday. I show up Monday, they won't let me in the building. They say, we jumped the gun. Your desk is not ready yet. You know, our stuff, we're not ready to get you. Just go home today and we'll get back in touch with you to this job that we've been offered. Never heard from them again. So unless that company went out of business from Friday to Monday, which they did not because I checked, I don't know what happened, though I have my suspicions. I don't know what happened, but that was, in my mind, the up there. I don't even remember the name of the company. Seconded only, but I had a horrible Facebook experience. But it wasn't nearly as bad as that. Like, showing up and not being let into the building because, oh, your desk is not ready.
What do you think it was actually about? You said you had a thought of what it was about. What do you think it was?
I'd done 4 interviews and met all the people who would have been either my staff or on dotted line with me. And the last interview was on Friday, and it was with the CEO, and who was every bit of, if you want to go to Central Casting for Tech Bro, he was that guy. And seemed to go okay with me. There was a little distance, you know, but I don't say that it was racial. Who knows? I don't know what it was. The guy could have known me from some other context, and I didn't remember him. But whatever it was, I think when he found out that I was standing outside the building on Monday, it's like, wait a minute, you made this guy an offer? You know, and I think it was rescinded. But the cowardly way that they dealt with, your desk is not ready, we'll get a hold of you, and then nothing. I suspect largely now that they're out of business, because I think I would have remembered had I heard the name again. But that was ridiculous. Well, it didn't hurt my feelings as much as it was just ridiculous.
Well, here's one that is also in the ridiculous category. And this one is, I'm not using anybody's names because they asked me not to. So every name you're going to hear is fake. This one, I had a long conversation with this woman who I'm going to call Belle. And I actually did some research to know that this is a true story. And so Belle is a Black woman, very experienced, and has a VP level position at a global advertising agency in marketing. She was recruited for a medium-sized regional advertising agency whose job is, whose kind of claim to fame is that they can reach Gen Z. Interestingly enough, the two founders and the leadership team are primarily white, older men, right? Middle-aged men. So they understandably came to a younger Black woman and said, we would like to hire you. A months-long recruiting process ensues in which they never get her name right. So she has a name that's very easy to pronounce, but like mine, Stephanie, is a little bit longer. And they immediately go to a diminutive. It would be like me going into a job interview, introducing myself as Stephanie, and people starting to call me Steffi. Right? She corrected them. They continued to do this. This went on for months. So then she finally was told that she was the last candidate. Everybody loved her. They thought she was fantastic. To clinch the deal, she needed to come up with a social media strategy that she would implement and come in and present it to the leadership team. So she worked hard, and she actually showed me this presentation. And I don't know, I'm not a social media expert, but I know enough to know that what she presented to them was something that a consultant would charge five figures for. I mean, it was very comprehensive. It was excellent. And, you know, one of the things that she said is that, you know, you can't have culture without Black.
Like she
was bringing them something that they otherwise could not access with their current staff. So she showed the presentation. Everybody loved it. It was fantastic. It was wonderful. Time passes. She gets a call from the recruiter who says, actually, we have another candidate. And, you know, we were talking about, I know you wanted a VP position, but that can't actually be something that, you know, we give you. And I know that the job description said that the top of the salary band was this number, but we're not going to be able to offer you that number. This is their salary band, what they had presumably, you know, had funded and approved. She wasn't asking for more than what it was. She was asking for this. Very qualified. I've seen this woman's LinkedIn profile. More than qualified for this job. So she went to the CEO, who would have been her boss, and explained, I'm not taking a demotion. I need to be at the VP level. And he said, VP is something here that really is only for the cream of the crop. It really means something. And we just can't give you a VP title. So she went to LinkedIn and looked at the LinkedIn profile for a woman who is a VP. And guess what? She had less experience than Belle. But she was white. Long blonde hair, white woman. So ultimately, she went to that. They did offer her the job, reduced title, reduced salary. She said no. And they told her, oh, well, you know, thanks for that whole strategy that you put together. You know, we're going to pay you $300 for that. And that was their only acknowledgement that she had done, that she'd done all of the work. So I guess, and, you know.
I'm curious if she had said, that's okay. I don't want the $300. I want to retain my rights to that. Would she have been able to get away with that?
I think it's a gray area. I think it's one of those situations where it's, you know, there's no contract during these processes, right? So there's nothing that says, and also they can say they're not going to use it and then just use it anyway and pretend that they didn't. And I think that's the challenge. And of course, when we get to recommendations, which, you know, we will, one of them is do not do this, right? Just you can't give it to them. Because another story that was also interesting is from a guy I'm going to call Peter. He's a Black man and he is a booking agent for record labels. He saw a job advertised by a record label that primarily promotes Black artists. Mm-hmm. Everyone in leadership at that record label is white.
Mm-hmm.
So they invited him to come in for, he applied for a job. And they said, you know, great. They had good conversations. Everything's going really well. Multiple interviews. They say, come in and bring us a playlist of the artists that you're enjoying. You know, tell us what your tastes are. So he comes in and plays in the playlist. And they're like, oh, we've never heard of that artist. Wow. Mm-hmm. Tell us more about this one. There were a number of artists on his playlist that this record label had never heard of before.
Yep.
Then they disappear. He doesn't hear anything. He doesn't get any sort of response. He finally calls and gets through to the voicemail of the recruiter and then gets a, you know, stop kind of, you know, thank you for your time. We're not considering you anymore.
Uh-huh.
A few months later, he sees not one, but multiple advertisements and events with this record label promoting the artists that he introduced them to that they had never heard of before he showed up with his plan.
Yeah.
Right. And his quote was in the email exchange that we had. So there you have it, a horrid combination of shitty hiring practice, free labor, and exploitation.
Yeah. That's bad. Well, you know, my time at Ozzy involved a lot of that as well, right? I mean, you experienced it to a certain degree, but you were essentially asked to write a white paper, five story pitches, five this, five that. I mean, it was a sizable piece of writing that you were being asked to do, and not a lot of clarity around ownership. What are the five stories that you think are undercovered? But I guarantee you, in each case, if those were any good, big uncovered stories, like in mainstream, we took them. we just out and out took them. In fact, it's so rife with this. When I did Code Magazine, which is a men's fashion magazine in LA, and I was just living the good life, editor-in-chief, fancy parties, nice suits, having a great time. At one point, I went to the National Association of Black Journalists. They had a big meeting in St. Louis, and I went. And some guy came up to me, and he said, hey, have you ever heard of Manifest? I said, no, Manifest. So, well, I know the guys at Manifest, and what they had done was a market study to show that over 60% of GQ's readership were men of color. And so they said, we could build a magazine on that 60%. Asian men, Latino men, African-American men, Indian men, we could build. And they said, we need somebody to publish it. And they took it around from publisher to publisher. They found somebody at Condé Nast. The person at Condé Nast said, hey, guess what? I'm going to go to work for Larry Flint. You should, present. And because Larry Flint did non-porn titles. And so they presented to Larry Flint. He goes, I'm not interested. Thanks. Great. And he turns around, and he created Code Magazine. I mean, thieves, shysters, chiselers, scoundrels. It's just out now. It's disgusting. So, and the more creative you get, like the guy who wrote in with the record label, the more crazy it is. It's just, I would never think of doing that in any professional setting. Just take your work and just take it. Just take it. Why? Because I can. And that's not a good reason. So.
Well, and with so many people out of work right now and so many layoffs, there are a lot of people who are really, they're not really in a position where they can say no. They're desperate for a job. Like one guy wrote in, the one that coined the, IP harvesting line, which I like, older man in his 50s, really needing to be employed, applied for a contract position at a company that he was hoping would make it into full time. The very long interview process, good relationship with the CEO. The CEO says, hey, I've got an idea. Why don't we hire you for a full-time position? You write up your job description, your strategy and tactics to fix this, difficult kind of technical area. And, what we'll measure the job on, what your, key performance indicators, KPIs are. This is not a stupid man, but he really wants a full-time job. So he writes all that up and doesn't even get the contract position, let alone the full-time position.
Yeah.
Right? And I think what's the challenging part of this too is the level of, you know, and I don't think that all of these recruiters are necessarily bad people. Right? Mm-hmm. I think that there's a unwillingness to learn or an assumption about who they are, right? So when Bell didn't get the job, she called the recruiter back, a white woman,
mm-hmm.
who had, mm-hmm. you know, been decent. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't her mm-hmm. thing. And Bell said, listen, I want to give you some feedback on what this mm-hmm. process was like for me as a Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
I did some research, and on Glassdoor, there are a number of comments and reviews about your company that talk yep. about how badly people of color are treated, and specifically yep. call out people of color's competence being questioned mm-hmm. and underestimated. And mm-hmm. that is something that I experienced in this process.
Yep.
And the recruiter said, this is what she said. Well, that can't be, because the CEO, who's a white man, he has two Black daughters.
yeah, okay. All right. Well, that solves it. Case closed, you know.
And I think this is one of the challenges is that, you know, there's a certain sense of this is how it's always been done. And then there's also a sense of, but we did our DEI training. We have a Black ERG. You know, we have one of our people in leadership who are all white has a, you know, spouse who is a person of color or a child who is and there's this unwillingness.
My best friend is Jewish.
Right.
My best friend is gay. You know, I had a situation. I mean, you have always two conversations going on. There's the one, the audible one that we're hearing. And then there's the sub-audible one that's really happening, you know. And Mad Magazine did a great job of capturing it, if you remember, what the shadow knows. And it would show people doing normal things and the shadow acting out what they really wanted to do. And I had an interview with... I mean, this is first job out of college, so I was throwing my net wide. It was for a district manager at AMC movie theaters, right? Like, so any way to get into entertainment, you know, you write distribution of film, it's a big deal. And I'm in the middle of this interview, and it dawns on me that the guy who's interviewing me hates me for whatever reason. And I developed, during the course of this hour-long interview, an intense hatred for him as well. And at one point, he asked me, Rick San Vicente was his name, because you never forget. And he goes, Stanford, huh? He's looking at the resume. I go, yeah. I go, oh, I'm sorry, do you go to Cal? Because I figured, he said it like there was some. He goes, I went to the school that kicks your school's ass every year in football. I go, I'm not a football fan. He goes, USC. I go, oh, impressive. Right. I shouldn't have said impressive. At the end of the interview, he kept me asking me the same question four times in a row. And it really wasn't about the question. At that point, now it was like the line in Sexy Beast where the guy is trying to convince the gangster to do it and just keep saying the same thing again and again. And I really thought that we were about 30 seconds from going out in the parking lot and fist fighting over this. And, you know, the punchline, of course, it did not get the job, but I've never forgotten the man's name. And I think companies, we try to act like professional is a place outside of the personal, and it's really not. It never is. We can hide behind that, but it never is. And people are not going to do that which makes them uncomfortable. He didn't like the fact that I got into Stanford. That somehow offended his sensibilities, somehow, you know? So I think how do you legislate this? How do you move around this? How do you work? I mean, I never forget the fact that my first job out of college that I actually got in my industry, you know, journalism, was given to me. I had to interview for the process because the head of HR at this company had nixed a qualified African-American woman employee before, and the Argentinian heads of the magazine that I went to work for were offended and said, we're going to get somebody that she absolutely can't turn down. And they happened to find me. And I had two resumes going out at that time. One resume indicated that I was a member of the Black Students Union at Stanford, which I was. And then one just left that off. And it was the one that said Black Students Union that got me the job, because these guys were specifically targeting her crap ass behavior with my hire. And that's how I got into starting to my career in journalism, which is, it's kind of like a good thing, but then not really. And of course, the woman later became a big champion of mine and loved my work. Did she learn something from that? I have no idea. Nice lady, Jean Okashima, but you know, who knows? Who knows?
Well, one of the things that I thought was interesting, and when I was talking to Belle, was, you know, she could understand and articulate the ways in which there was systemic racism operating throughout the project. Mm-hmm. And she knows her qualifications, which are clear. She understands that whole dynamic. But what she also shared with me was that there was that part inside of her that said, what if they're right? What if I am not the job? What if I'm not as qualified as some of these other people? And that duality of understanding the system, understanding what is happening, and at the same time thinking, well, maybe it's not that. Maybe it's just, I'm no good at my job. Maybe I'm just not qualified. Maybe I don't interview well. You know, any of those things, and how corrosive that is.
Yeah.
It's already hard enough to be doing a job search process, but then to have that, like, is it this or is it not? Especially when you have, and she used the phrase gaslighting, when you have a group of people who, a white people who perceive themselves to be progressive, who believe they have understood their white privilege because their boss has, you know, adopted black daughters, and that therefore there's no hint of anything else, and just the impact of that on her in this process that, again, had been going on for months. But you mentioned needing to dissemble in a, you know, job interview. And there's another story that I got is from a woman I'll call Rachel, who is a white woman, and she is a single parent to a toddler. And she has been out of work, out of full-time work for since last fall, so over a year. Has had a couple of contract jobs, but has been looking for a long time, very qualified. And she never tells people that she's a single parent, ever. She will occasionally mention that she has a child if it feels like it's a safe environment, if, you know, other people, but generally it's something she keeps really, really quiet. So a great job came up that she was very qualified for as a director of marketing. And in a particular, for a particular company, and she applied for it. They were using an outside recruiter, and he had one of those little Calendly links, you know, like click here. The problem was the only times he was available for interviews was before 8 o'clock in the morning or after 6 o'clock at night. Well, you know, if you are a single parent to a toddler, even if you're a parent to a toddler, not the optimum moments to be doing a video call from your home. So she got an appointment for 8:30 on a Monday night, thinking, okay, at least the kid will be in bed. But asked, you know, do you have any other, I noticed your only times were outside of these windows. Do you have anything that's closer to working hours? And he got back and he said, yeah, I can actually do 5 o'clock on Monday instead of 8:30. Great. So arranged for her toddler to stay a little later at daycare. She's sitting there ready to go, totally prep for an interview at 5 o'clock. Nothing. She sends him an email, checks the link, crickets. So finally she runs to go pick up her child, comes home, does the super quick, you know, like, let's get some food in you, get a bath, read the book, go to bed. Okay. So she can be at the 8:31 that's scheduled. He shows up for the 8:31, and this is what he says. Oh, sorry about before. My Peloton was just calling my name.
Oh man. Oh man.
So she talked about, she didn't use that phrase, this shadow behind her, but she talked about the idea of, like, of her frustration of having, you know, completely messed up her evening when a simple text, return, email, anything could have made it easier. And that assumption that she has nothing else better to do, but she dissembles because she needs the job. Excellent interview, conversation, everything's going great. Until she hears, mommy, mommy, I'm scared. And she says to the guy, can you just excuse me for a minute? I have to go and get my child. Hits mute, leaves, gets the kid a glass of water, is back in, she says, less than 60 seconds. Kid's quiet. This guy looks and says, well, You're a better parent than I am, because I would have just let him cry it out. And her thought, again, is like, so now he knows I'm a parent, which was not something she would have revealed. He has a pretty good idea that I'm a single parent, because if there was another co-parent in the house, that person would have gone and gotten the kid. Mm-hmm. And he's now judging my parenting because I stepped away from an 8:30 p.m. video call for less than a minute to comfort my crying child. Continues, dissembles, needless to say, never hears back from them again.
Okay. There are a couple of ways. I have a friend who had been for a period of time an executive at Glassdoor, and he said a goodly portion of his job at this point was legal, because companies are trying their damnedest to get in to find out who's doing it, and they've got their wall at Glassdoor is impermeable. You cannot. We will not give the information. We won't provide you. Sue us all you want. You're not getting this information. So it's a pretty reliable place to blow people up if you need to do that. But when I think I had a friend who was an undercover detective. He worked for like Pinkerton or something like this. And he had a really interesting job task. His job task was they would put him in places where they were having problems. And he was essentially a narc, right? So he worked during the course of a year. He'd be in a factory or, working at Home Depot or, usually working class gigs, but, good decent gigs with sometimes unions. I'm an electrician for today. And he would, encourage people to do bad. I mean, he had a problem with the job in its essence. But at one point he said one guy had gotten a bad review and was saying he was going to do something about it. And he was trying to talk the guy down. And as he's leaving work that night, there's a catwalk in the warehouse. So it was warehouse work that he had been. He was now a warehouse detective. So he's working in the warehouse and he sees the boss who had given the guy the bad review walking down between, these tall, whatever they were storing in the warehouse. And the guy who had gotten the bad review is stalking him with a brick. And he said, I know what my job was, and I knew I really should do it at that moment, but the guy who was being stalked was such a prick that I just figured, I'm going to let the jungle do what the jungle does. That guy really was hurt, was knocked out by his car. But at that point, he was a little more judicious about throwing out bad reviews, which I think was the upshot. But it makes you feel terribly powerless, and you wonder why. There's an article recently in Business Insider about how birth rates in Asia are through the floor because women are going, no, I'm not going to get paid less in the workplace, rush home and then make dinner for this dude who's getting paid more than me for no reason and raise it. I'm opting out. So it's a serious problem, but it makes a lot of sense. This guy had his Peloton was calling. It's disgusting.
Well, what made me sad was that, this woman is, a generation behind me. Right? Yeah. I mean, my daughter's 35 and, 36. And so I have, when I was a single mom of two little kids, I never talked about being a parent. I would never say I've got to take my daughter to the orthodontist. I would be like, I have an appointment and leave it. I was very careful about talking about that. And I was just so sad that she has to do the same thing now and wondering, is there a connection about that? She's very qualified. Is there a connection between the fact that she's been out of work as long as she has and the fact that, she's a parent or she's a single parent and that she didn't get this job? So I want to go to some of the advice, that I can give. And again, acknowledging that there are a lot of people who don't have the privilege to be super picky about their job. And you do what you have to do, right? But I would definitely say be judicious about working for free. Right?
Yeah.
Now, both of these.
If it's for free, it's not work.
Right. and ask for compensation or push back or just say, and what I generally suggest to people is if understand why they're asking you to do this, right? Mm-hmm. Do you want to know that I can present? Do you want to know that I can do a sales pitch? Do you want to understand that I can develop a strategy? Okay. I will show you work that I did for a previous client, right? Yeah. Or a previous
and employee. I say the phrase that I found most useful, and I've used it now constantly. And it's, I'm shocked it took me as long to discover it as it did. And it's a very simple, is there a budget for this? That's it. Right. That could mean a lot of things, but usually it means only one thing. And then you find out right away, you know, well, yeah, I think we might have some money in the budget. Or no, there's no money in the budget for it. And then you go, oh, okay.
That's
pause tells them. Yeah.
And that's worth saying, because I've done that. I've said, okay, because I did for a long time, I did business development. So I would do sales. And they would say, come up with a pitch for us and sell us. Mm. How would you sell our services? And I would say, I will tell you how I sold my last agency services. And I'd pull out anything that was proprietary. I mean, I'm not like, you know, giving away secrets, but it's like, if your ostensible reason is to understand, if you want to see me pitch, that's fair. You want to see me present, you want to understand, like, can I write? Want a writing sample? Yep. I am going to give you something that I have already done. I am not developing something for you, because I had a similar situation early in my career, was in, you know, participating in a job. They said, write us a strategic business development plan, which I did. And they took it and they didn't hire me. Yeah. Right. And you learn that. And there's some circumstances. I mean, in ad agency business development, a lot of times you're asked for spec work, right? Work for free. And sometimes they'll give you a token dollar amount. And I always remember that I was working for an agency in Seattle, and we were asked to pitch for a small coffee company that no longer exists, but they were trying to take on Starbucks. Mm. And we gave them spec creative, and it was good. And I don't think they paid us for it. If they did, it was something, you know, small. Mm-hmm. They didn't hire us. And within a couple of months, I saw the exact ad that we had presented. Exactly. I mean, they didn't even bother to change the colors or the fonts all over Seattle. And that's happened multiple times. So that is endemic to the advertising industry. And anybody that's ever been in ad agencies understands that. It's very different if I'm an individual person. It's very different if, like, this is my life. I still got my paycheck, whether or not they got a paycheck for this thing. So be judicious about working for free. Give them the, you know, understand what it is that they want to know, and try to give them work you have already done. Yep. Or make up something, but don't give them away your IP for free. The second thing is, advocate for yourself and do due diligence. Right? So in my negotiation training, I always talk about, understand exactly what you should be getting paid so you can ask for it. In this case, what Bell did was, you know, by checking on the current VP and looking at her LinkedIn, Bell was able to see, oh, this whole cream of the crop argument isn't true because I have more experience than the woman who currently works there who is a VP. Right. So do your due diligence and you know, dig up what it is, because obviously this guy wasn't about promoting the best of the best. He was about promoting the whitest of the white.
Yeah. And also, I tell you, I don't make a single step these days. I'm just not a commercial for Glassdoor, but go to Glassdoor, go to reviews, and type worst first. You can set the filter so that you read the 1-star reviews first. And generally, those have a lot. I mean, you can tell from, the companies will dismiss it. And I know they've dismissed this as disgruntled employees. But if you've got 300 disgruntled employees who are taking the time out of their schedule of finding another job to talk about this last job, you got a place that has problems. And it stopped me. It stopped me. I actually had an interview at a place, and this is in the last 2 years. And then thought, oh, maybe I should check Glassdoor. And they had horrible ratings. And I should have ghosted them. But instead, I just said, oh, you know, my stuff has changed. I'm going to go another way here and let them down that way. So you don't get yourself into a horrible place because you forgot to look at Glassdoor. So.
And this is another thing that came up when we were having this conversation, because, you know, was Bell couldn't decide whether or not to name the agency. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I were talking, and the question came up, do we name the agency? If we got Mel's permission, would we name the agency? Because one of the things we don't do is we don't generally talk about who the bad boss is by name or where they were working. And, you know, part of that is because I don't necessarily get a chance. We don't get to always do the research. We don't know how true it is. Part, you know, we protect ourselves legally. There's a lot of reasons for that. But with this one, since, you know, we knew it was true, that was the question. And she ultimately said, please don't name them. And that's, you know, that gets to be her call, and that's fair. But what I was thinking about is, you know, before Me Too, I had been sexually harassed many times. And I often felt I shouldn't say the name of the company or the man. I shouldn't say the man that, you know, did that. Because, you know, I grew up in a time and a generation and environment where it's like, that's, you know, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And I thought that that would come back at me because some of these were pretty powerful men. And that changed. So the last time that I had sexual harassment, it wasn't happening to me, but it was happening to a woman that worked for me. I was like, Seattle's a small community. People know this. And I didn't say it publicly. And it was true. I could prove it. But in smaller groups of women, when someone would say, hey, what about this role? I'd be like, not that guy. And I would name him. And I would say, this is the experience that I had with him. And I feel like when it comes to recruitment, the idea of holding people accountable, holding recruiters accountable, holding companies accountable. I mean, one of my hopes is that Rachel will take this podcast and send it to the company that hired this outside recruiter and say, this was my experience with this person. He should not be able to be recruiting for that company because it's a reputable company. He should not be, he should not be working for them anymore. So I think, especially if you are a person of color, a marginalized community, tell your friends about these, these people. Tell your friends about these agencies, because again, especially these organizations that are marketing to younger people, that are marketing to Black people, who are treating Black people.
Silence is death, right? So speaking out to somebody somewhere is going to have an effect upstream. It'll help people, you know, or downstream as the case may be. It will help people. And this is kind of what we're about. So for sure do that. I mean, unless you don't like the person and then you, you let them do it. I mean, we mentioned the kid. There was the Chronicle was going, San Francisco Chronicle was going through some changes. And when I was at Ozzy, they were looking to hire an editorial director. They had lost a woman who had taken the job from Yahoo, and this woman was an esteemed editor at the Chronicle was looking. She lived in San Francisco. Ozzy was in Mountain View, which, if you don't know Bay Area, it, given rush hour traffic, that's an hour plus commute, right? And they interviewed with the upper staff, and then she came to her interview with me. And I said, listen, they usually put me at the end of the cycle because I'm a hopeless truth teller, but I'm a father as well. And I can let you know that if what they said to offer you this job, you know, who you, you know, a woman with two kids under 8 years old, that you will leave the house before eight to get to meetings here at nine, which they will schedule. If not earlier, and you will get the stink eye if you attempt to leave the office at 4 or 5, which means leaving the office at 6, which means with rush hour traffic, getting home at 7 every day. And she said, well, they said I could work from home. I go, don't you believe it? You know, nobody's successfully done that here. This is prior to COVID. So, you know, you need to force this issue, get it in writing. Because you know, they should have told you this. And so she went back to them and asked for the stuff in writing, and they said that there's no need to put it in writing. And she, of course, threw me under the bus and said, well, Eugene said, which is fine, whatever, I'm not trying to hide. And they call me in afterward and goes, what are you doing? I go, I'm doing what's best for the company. Because 3 months down the road, when she decides, I never see my kids anymore, screw you, I'm leaving, we've got to start the process again. What are you doing lying to her? And of course, that was one of the pebbles in terms of the lies that were told at Ozzy, I guess. But yeah, you know, you got to speak out. Maybe I shouldn't have done it. I don't know. But you got to speak out. I didn't want to see her kids go through that. I didn't want to see her go through that or her husband go through that. It was garbage that they were lying to her, you know, force them to like really let her work from home. That works too, but they were never going to do that.
And I want to underline that. So that's, you were, she was doing accidental due diligence and that you were open with her. Those are questions that you should get to if you can. Although again, then there's the bind. You don't necessarily want to say because I have kids and then not get the job, but you need to know that, but the get it in writing. I have seen so many people who have been promised bonuses or private offices or working from home and maybe even by somebody who was well-intentioned and then that person leaves. Or they get transferred. Another boss comes in. You have to have it in writing. So anything that has to do with that, make sure to get it in writing. And then the last part is, you know, if there are well-intentioned recruiters that are listening to this with a desire to be fair, who want to be better at recruiting, look at a couple of things. How many interviews do you make people go through? I've been part of plenty of hiring processes and there's really not a reason to have more than like 4 interviews. I mean, like they're really
9. I had 9 at Facebook, 9.
You know, I mean, there's nothing that's, so look at, if you are a recruiter, look at your process, streamline it. And then also understand if you get feedback from a person from a marginalized community about your recruiting process, listen to them and believe them. You know, dude, like the idea that someone is saying the CEO can't have any issues, he can't be racist because he has 2 black daughters. Like I thought that had gone out with like, can I touch your hair? Right. That there are just some things that white people ought to know. And that evidently people didn't get the memo. And I think that, you know, realizing, you know, one of the things when I was talking to Belle, you know, she was asking like, you know, what do I do? And I have to say at this point, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say about this, is I've seen so many people of color, right? Was basically black and brown, who have gone into a workplace that is mostly white leadership. And they say, we really want to have a diverse leadership team. We've done our homework. We've done our DEI training. We want you to be part of this. And then they come in, they get hired, and it turns out to be a disaster. It's nonstop microaggressions. And so what I wonder, if you were talking to somebody like Belle, who's, you know, mid-career, would you say to her, hey, if there aren't people of color on the leadership team, don't even bother?
No, I don't. I wouldn't say that, and I'll tell you why. I interviewed at Ziff Davis, and I don't remember the job I had before then. I think I'd already been at EPRI, the Electric Power Research Institute. I'd already been at the Defense Electronics Magazine, and maybe this is my 3rd or 4th job out of college now. And Ziff Davis, huge publisher, I interviewed with a great guy named Dennis Eskow, and he's from Long Island, another New Yorker. And so when he looked at my resume, which at that time, you know, we don't have a lot to put on your resume, 2nd job, 3rd job out of college, I put my high school. So I went to a special high school in New York for, you know, one of the brilliant kids, right? Stuyvesant High School. So he knew right away that this was somebody from California wouldn't have known. So he has me come in and he says, listen, you don't have, it was for Corporate Computing Magazine, you don't have a really deep background in computer tech, but I know you know writing, I know you can write, I've read your writing, and I'm giving you the job. So he gave me the job. I have no complaints about Ziff Davis at all. There were no African, he was a, you know, older Jewish guy, and he knew we had some, like I lived in Crown Heights for a period of time. So we were, you know, goofing on kind of the Hasidim thing. He was an Orthodox Jew. But then, so I felt very comfortable. I felt comfortable. But what I start to notice after having been there for 6 months is that almost everybody else at my level had no computer technology in their background either. And I don't know, they could have had the same speech. it's a dispensation. We're a comedy. You know, this is a affirmative action of a kind, right? I don't know if they would have gotten the same speech. I'm not talking crap about Dennis Eskow. Like I said, he was a great guy, but it was just a very weird setup. But the reality, an executive staffer who's African American, let's go down the road 12 months where they sell the magazine and they're trying to find placement for people inside Ziff. I interview with Joel Dreyfus, who used to work, well, I don't want to cheat the story, and we're talking, and he keeps saying, we, and I'm like, who is this we that he's identifying with that somehow includes me? And then he sees I'm not getting it, and he says, us Black folks. And so he's I get it. He's a very light-skinned Black guy. And I go, oh, okay, also from back east, also knew my high school. But he paused and says, I need to tell you, I love what I'm seeing here on your resume, but I'm not giving you the job. But maybe we should have coffee sometime or something. I was like, yeah, okay, thank you. He had written for Black Enterprise, and my stepfather for a period of time had been, you know, a staffer at Black Enterprise magazine, and all of that didn't matter. And a weird inversion, African-American guy, the executive staff African-American guy chose not to hire me because he didn't want to be seen as maybe hiring me because he had a preference. So he went overboard to not have a preference. So there's weirdness abounding, you know, in terms of this professional setting. But again, when you start to confuse the professional and the personal, which always happens, stuff like this is going to happen. It's not going to stop. You can't stop it, you know?
Right. All right. Well, that's it for today. And again, thanks to everybody who got in touch from the LinkedIn appeal or just, you know, sent it to our email, WTF@badbossbrief.com. We'd love to hear from you. And as you can tell, I actually had some email exchanges and some conversations with people. So, you know, gave out a little bit of advice and thought process. So thanks very much to everybody that helped.
I love the cat thing. The cat story.
Right. Write a white paper on mobile cat grooming. Like that one is just, you know, it's not just advertising.
I go, I lose, you win, keep the job. I'm gone.
All right. On that note, thanks very much. We will be back soon. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Bad Boss Brief podcast with your hosts, Eugene S. Robinson and Stephanie Payrollo. You can check out more of their work by visiting consigliera.substack.com for Stephanie and eugenesrobinson.substack.com for Eugene. You can also find Eugene at Mr. Sleep 3, that's number 3, on Instagram. Reach out with your questions, concerns, workcase situations, or suggestions to us at WTF@badbossbrief.com. We personally answer every submission. Be sure to join us at badbossbrief.substack.com every other Wednesday for episodes of Bad Boss Brief for our Sub Rosa shorts. Until next time, don't be an asshole at work.